Thank you. Thanks to the organizers too for giving me the opportunity to come over here and give a presentation. So this talk will be done with GNU Techmax, which is a software for writing mathematics. You can test it here at the Fields Institute. I think it's installed on most of the computers here, so if you're curious, please take a look. So I'll be talking today about guessing. So most computational systems nowadays, you ask them a question and they give you a reply, but you already have to know the question that you have to ask, that you want to ask. So typically, if after some numerical computation you see appear something like this on the screen, then this might recall you primary school and see that there is some repetition going on here. And it might be nice that these kinds of expressions be automatically replaced by a simpler formula. So today I will be talking about some techniques for different types of problems, for guessing these kinds of things. So what are the applications, possible applications? So first of all, I think that for future interfaces to computational systems, it would be nice if these things actually were done automatically. So that if you have some numerical result, which is actually, well, a nice symbolic expression, then that these things are guessed automatically, at least by some option selected by the user. So more comprehensive output is one application. Of course, if these things get a bit more complicated, let's say that the program is going to automatically say that, that some function is actually a Bessel function, for instance, then, it might actually be that the person who asked the question at the very first place wasn't yet aware at all of the existence of these Bessel functions at the first place. So doing these kinds of things systematically may also lead to new unexpected insights. And a final application is, even though guessing something may not be correct, and mathematicians want at the end to prove something which is correct, even if a guess is not necessarily correct, it may give a good hint for how to do some other computations. So good guesses can give some hints in how to do algorithms. So let's look at some classical old algorithms. One of the most natural, oldest things is for guessing whether a real number is a rational number, and this can be done by continued fraction expansion. So if x0 is a real number, just take its integer part and write it like that, and here 1 over x1, the x1 here is again a real number. I think we can do this step once more, and so on and so on, and we obtain the continued fraction expansion of x, and it can be proved, this is very classical, thousands of years old, that this is actually the best approximation for real number by rational numbers with a bound on the denominator. So how can we do this fast? So if you write this down symbolically, then you will always be able to compute expressions for the XL that you have here as a function of x0, using a fraction like this, with integers there, and the same for any of the xk plus l as a function of xl. This can be rewritten in matrix form, and the nice thing is that if we want to go from x0 to xl, then we can go from x0 to xl over 2, and then from xl over 2 to xl, and we have this matrix relation here. So the nice thing here is that if you look at that, if you use this formula recursively to compute the rational fraction, a continued fraction expansion, then in order, roughly speaking, to get a p-bit rational approximation, we will need to do twice a p over 2-bit approximation, and then some integer multiplications which correspond to this matrix product. And if you use a fast algorithm for multiplying integers, then this gives us a fast algorithm which is almost linear time. So we can find 1 billion of digits in maybe a minute or so, or maybe even seconds. So let's see if this works. Okay. So what next? Now, a next natural question would be to know whether something is, for instance, an algebraic number. So how can we guess, more generally, linear dependencies over the integers for a given set of real numbers? So if we take for the real numbers some powers of a real number, then that would allow us to check whether something is some number is an algebraic number. But we can do other things, like here, for instance, some polylogarithms testing relations between those, or expressing something as a rational combination of e and pi, for instance. So one approach to do this is to make up this matrix here. And try to, where epsilon is a small number, and try to find a small vector in the vectors which are generated over Z by the rows in this matrix. If we can find a small vector there, then that will mean that basically we are close to such a relation. So if we were not dealing with integer combinations but just real combinations, that would just mean that we have to find the shortest vector, and that can, for instance, be done by Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization. So a variant of this is the well-known LLL algorithm. I'm going very briefly to present some work in progress in a very simplified, a bit incorrect way, but to make this algorithm work in an asymptotically fast way. So what we do is, as I said, we start with the Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization. So just work over R, And we also do some pivoting. So we always put the smallest vectors. We try to keep them in front. So we do this, and then once that has been done, we just remind that we wanted to have integer relations. So we take this the transformation matrix, the unitary transformation matrix, which did this Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization, and we take its integer part. Now, if this is actually the identity matrix, then nothing happens, so then we're done, basically. Otherwise, we just apply this transformation and keep on doing that. And this actually works quite well. One can also, instead of outputting the reduced matrix R, output the transformation matrix. And then in a similar way as what we did for the rational numbers, what we have here with this matrix relation, we can try to do exactly the same thing for lattice reduction. So we reduce first the matrix, but where we put some where we work at the precision p over 2. This can be done again by putting this epsilon times the identity matrix at the right hand side of n, and then at the next step we just reduce this transformation applied to n and return t2 times t1. So this is, I'm cheating a little bit, but in many cases this actually already works. So more generally, one has also power series and polynomial analogs of all these things. So for instance, if we take a power series here, can we find polynomial such that this power series is actually a rational function? So the equivalent of continued fraction approximation in that case is Padet approximation. One can also try to find polynomial dependencies, linear polynomial relations between a fixed number of power series. So this is called Padet-Hermit approximation. So there are some algorithms due to Beckermann, Laban, Derksen, which have been implemented in the GFUN system by Salvi and Zimmermann. So typical applications of this are that we have something like the Fibonacci numbers, and we try to find that this was really a rational function. Or, for instance, we can take, for a fixed function phi, we can take for f1 until fn here, phi and its derivatives, and then we're checking whether this function is going to satisfy a linear differential equation over the polynomials. These functions cover about 95% of the special functions which occur in practice are of that kind. So it's interesting to be able to guess these things. Okay, so that is more or less the classical part my talk. So at the remainder of the talk, I'm going to try and guess things at singularities. So now we're going to be interested in analytic functions in one complex variable, and we want to investigate the singularities of these functions, which possess lots of information about these functions. So, for instance, it is well known that by Polya theory that if you want to count the number of alcohols of this chemical formula, then the generating function which counts this number of alcohols satisfies the functional equation, which is the thing you see here. And one can compute many coefficients of this this thing, and it might be nice if we could guess the asymptotic formula, for instance, for this generating function. If we could guess what kind of singularity is going to occur for this. Well, in this case, the theory is well known. So it actually the dominant singularity is algebraic, of a form that you see here. But would it be possible to get this kind of information automatically? So a first approach to that is we're given so we're given some analytic function defined on the disk, and we have a finite number of singularities inside the disk. Let's say that they're all isolated, and our aim is now to find, if we are given d functions of this kind, are we able to find analytic functions which are now defined on the whole disk, so g1, g until gd and h, so that this relation holds. Okay. So in particular, we might want to find, in a similar way as for the LLL algorithm for lattice reduction, we might try to find a minimal relation of this type. Where we take, if we assume that R is equal to 1, then we can take this kind of norm for analytic functions which are defined on the disk and a little bit outside. So one way of doing that is a very brutal way. Just encode this relation truncated up to order n in matrix form. So we encode the equation by this matrix that we see here, the vector g by something there, so that gm is going to be the matrix you see over there, and then just apply Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization as we've done before. So I'm not going to enter into details, but what one can prove is that basically this strategy is going to be ultimately correct. So that means if there is a relation, not only we are going to find these relations, but at every truncation order we have such a relation, we can compute a canonical minimal relation, and these minimal relations will tend actually to a power series limit for the norm that I just introduced. If there is no relation, then basically as this truncation order will go to infinity, these norms will also go to infinity. So for instance, if you want to guess to apply this for a function which is just a rational function like here, then you can see that the relations that we get indeed at higher and higher orders tend to quickly converge to some power series limit, which in this case actually can be computed. If we go back to this alcohol example, then one has to do a little bit more. It doesn't converge very well if it's applied right away, but if we first concentrate on a slightly smaller disk around singularity and then apply the algorithm, then basically again we will have convergence, and it's not a very fast convergence, but and in particular the power series relations we find will not be defined outside the unity disk in this case. Also, one may be interested what happens if there doesn't exist a relation. How good are the things nevertheless going to be? So if you take different types of singularities, for instance, a logarithmic singularity, a square root, an exponential singularity, a random singularity, where all the coefficients of the power series are being taken random, and we look at the norms that we get and how these norms vary for different expansion, truncation orders, and for different lambdas, so whether we're close to, whether the singularity is close to zero or not, then we basically see this pattern coming up here. So if the singularity gets close to zero and we use high truncation orders, then definitely this thing is going to be, this norm is going to be very high. So this gets a way to detect that there is no dependency. And an interesting thing is that these norms do not very much depend on the type of singularity. If we take an exponential one, a logarithmic one, or another one, it doesn't really matter. It behaves more or less the same for psi 1, psi 2, psi 3. And there's also a guess for how far we would have to go. Okay, so now if we wanted to check for very specific types of singularities, then we might have some better algorithms even. So for instance, if you want to have to test whether something is a rational function on a disk, or whether, so meromorphic on a disk, or whether the singularities are algebraic. So what can we do in that case? So for instance, for testing whether it's meromorphic on the unit disk. So definitely, if we do have an expression of type, p times a polynomial such that p times f going to be analytic on the disk, and if we just write that out in matrix forms, what it means on the first coefficients, then we should have nearby relations of the kind that we see there. So the idea is simply to solve this linear system. And check for the solution, whether if we multiply the solution by our power series, so we get a new power series, whether this power series doesn't grow to, the coefficients don't grow too fast. So if you're looking at the unit disk, the radius of convergence, so the increase of the coefficient should be at most, well, at least slower than exponential. Okay. So that's a way to test, a very efficient way for testing whether something is neuromorphic on the unit disk. If we want to guess whether a singularity is algebraic, that is a little bit harder. But assume that we also have an algorithm for the analytic continuation of our function. For instance, assume that f, let's say, was a solution of a differential equation. If we have a solution of a differential equation, then we can just analytically continue this equation at every point by using the initial condition and solving the initial value problem. So assume that we can analytically at least continue the function on this disk here, except of course at the singularities themselves, that we approximately know where these singularities are, and we want to know now the nature of these singularities. So what we can do, if all these singularities are really algebraic, then that means that if we turn around them many times, then there are only a finite number of leaves if we keep on turning around these two singularities. So at a certain point, we should find the original function itself back. So the idea of the algorithm is to start with our function f and perform this saturation step. So as long as in this finite set phi, if we take an element and turn around a singularity, we get a new function which was not already in phi, then we keep adding that to the set phi. If the set phi gets too large, then it means that, well, if there was a polynomial relation, then the degree of this polynomial relation will be at least that specified number n. So then we say that we failed. Otherwise, at a certain point, this set phi is going to stabilize, which means that every time that we turn around an element of phi around one of the singularities, we get again an element of the set phi. The input, as I said, we do have an algorithm for analytic continuation. So I assumed already that I can turn around the singularities and, for instance, compute the power series expansions at the origin for all these functions in phi, for instance, to any desired order, and compare whether they are equal or not. This is a guessing algorithm, right? So it's not zero tests are never exact, but if for instance 100 terms coincide, then we just say, well, we believe that they're equal, right? That's not what we do here. No. Here we're just guessing for the moment. Then afterwards we can feed it into a Zeilberger-like thing if we want to have more information. But already we just want to guess, to have some reasonable feeling about what is going on. So now we have these functions. So basically what we can then just do is compute the polynomial which has these functions as a root. And if each of these things, the coefficients of these polynomials is a rational is a meromorphic function on the unit disk, then we found a relation. And I just showed before how to find these how to check or to guess whether a function is meromorphic. So that means we're done. Similar thing can be done for testing whether we have a linear differential relation of this type. In that case, instead of just looking at the set of functions that we get by turning around, we look at the vector space of all the functions I get by turning around. And if at a certain point this vector space is going to stabilize, then I can compute the differential operator which vanishes on all these on this whole, the smallest linear differential operator which vanishes on this whole vector space. This can be done by, well, in some suitable OR ring. And so the same argument works. So this only basically works for so-called Fuchsian singularities. So no exponential part. So we can have some logarithms at the singularities, but no exponentials. If you have singularities like this, for instance, then we wouldn't get the relation. Okay, so that about guessing relations at singularities. So we have seen different algorithms for doing that. But we can also want to not guess a specific relation at the singularity, but we may just want to know how the singularity looks like. Or what the asymptotic behavior of our coefficients is. So for instance, assume that we are given the factorials, the factorial numbers, 1, 2, 6, 24, and so on, and that we want to guess what is the asymptotic form of, if n gets large, how does n factorial behave? So let me give an example. So here I'm going to compute the vector of the first 1,000 factorial numbers. I'm going to call a mathematics function which is called guess asymptotics. So the parameter is 7 here, is just stating how far I want to test, how precise my asymptotic expansion is going to be. So here you see the result. So here the software basically automatically found Stirling's formula. So here you see the familiar n power n, here divided, well, more or less divided by n. We also have some or e power n, and here we so have the square root of n coming in, right? And we actually got an asymptotic expansion here. So we also may want to do this for this polya example of the number of alcohols. So here we have the generating function. And we can compute that generating function quite far. So here's the number of alcohols of length 1,000. So we compute this sequence, and we again can guess the asymptotics. We have to wait a little bit.
Why did you choose the time that we're able to fit here now? You put 9 now.
Yeah, I go a bit far, farther than the 7 that we had there.
Why do you do that?
Well, just depends on how many terms I want to have there. So here we found something nice. So first of all, here we can read an estimate for the radius of convergence. So basically, the dominant singularity of this thing was exactly at that point. We also see the familiar power for those who do singularity analysis of 1 over n power 3 over 2, which corresponds to this algebraic singularity that we have. And we get the remaining a complete asymptotic expansion, actually. So this is automatic. We didn't do any analysis here, right? We just put this sequence inside inside this whole mechanism, and it just pops out the. So let me explain a little bit of the underlying algorithm for this. So first of all, as a tool, this algorithm is based on so-called trend series, which are expressions which are built up with exponentiation, logarithm, an infinitely large variable x at infinity, the real numbers, and field operations, and an infinite summation operator. So it's a bit like x-block expressions, except that we may take infinite sums. So here I introduce my infinitely large variable. So let's see, for instance, if you want to compute 1 over x minus 1, this is the kind of asymptotic expansion that you will get for x very large at infinity. You can also take...
How does the system decide how many terms before using the bigger
notation? I can more or less change that. I can say that to lengthen an expansion, for instance.
So
by default, it's something like 5, and then I have operators to make it longer. And so here you see an interesting type of trend series where the asymptotic scale is non-Archimedean. So here you have a first infinity of terms, and then a second number of infinity of terms, because any power of x, of course, will be larger than 1 over e power x at infinity. So all these algorithms are a bit involved, because, of course, if I resubtract this first thing here, then I have to... I didn't do it in the right way. I probably wanted to do something like this, rather. So sometimes you have infinite cancellations which go on. So if you... I do something wrong here. Well, never mind. Ah, yeah, sure. Okay, so here we have an infinite cancellation, right? The first infinite number of terms just drop out. These trend series are very nice. They have a lot of structure. For instance, one can always integrate them. So remind that, for instance, the exponential of x squared, there's no elementary, it's not an elementary x-block function, but it is a trend series. So here we just compute the integral of it. Can do this for more complicated things. So here we compute the integral of x power x. One can also do summation, indefinite summation. So for instance, sum the sum for k from 1 until x of log x. And we get this formula. Here, I'm now going to make up the solution of the Euler equation, which is a divergent trend series. So we see it here. And another feature is that I can just evaluate this divergent series by so-called summation up to the least term. So I guess an appropriate numeric value of this this evaluation. Okay. So this is a basic building block. I assume that I can do these kinds of operations in the algorithm for guessing the asymptotics. Right. So this is just a toolbox. I'm not going to go into further details about this. How to do that exactly, but we're going to come now to the guessing algorithm. So we've shown that we're given a large number of coefficients of the generating function that we want to guess. And let us start with an easy example, which is that the asymptotic form is just a power series in 1 over n. So how then can we compute, how can we guess a0, a1, a2, and so on? So we start with this asymptotic formula. And one easy thing that we can do is just apply the finite difference operator. So subtract fn plus 1 minus fn. And this has the nice thing, the property that it's going to kill a0. So we get a new asymptotic formula back there. We repeat this. So we multiply this thing by n squared, and we again kill also the a1 that we have there, and so on. And after a certain number of steps, that is the 7 or the 9 that we just specified before, I say, okay, now that's enough. If we see a definite trend that, for instance, the sequence is going to limit, then I just take the last term of the sequence and I say, well, the limit is the last term of my sequence. So let's say, let's call it C2. And now we're going to go way up again. In the other way around, because all these operators, this finite difference operator, and they can be inverted. That means that I'm just doing finite summation now. And this finite summation, I'm going to do it using this trend series calculations. Okay, we just saw that we could sum a trend series. So basically this delta and my this operator, I can sum it. I can also evaluate it. That is what we saw with this divergent series. Generally, these series are going to be divergent, but nevertheless, I can sum them, and I can just compute in that way the missing constants that we had by taking each time the last element in the sequence as a guide. So this is another way to explanation of a classical, actually, numerical algorithm, which is called the E algorithm, where if one wants to guess Fn as a form, which is a linear combination of predefined functions. So here the predefined functions would be 1, 1 over n, 1 over n squared, and so on. But the next step is that basically we can combine several guessing strategies. So different tactics. Actually, we're going to combine three of them. The first tactic is that if we see that our sequence tends to a limit, more or less, so we guess that it's of this form, So how are we going to check that? So there's a criterion for checking that. It's just that if you look at the difference between Fn and the last term, that the relative error is going to be sufficiently small from a certain point on. So that's a criterion for checking, for guessing that thing is more or less constant, or tending to a constant. In that case, we're going to apply this delta transformation. More generally, well, and the inverse transformation, we can do it. That's what we just saw before. More generally, if we have some predefined function psi, like for instance psi n equal n, or psi n equal n square, or 1 over n, or something like this, we can do exactly the same thing. And the last tactic is the exponential tactic. If we're not in one of these cases, well, then we're just going to assume that this thing is going to be of the form plus or minus the exponential of some other sequence. So I'm going to take the logarithm of the sequence. And so if we started with n factorial, it's going to take, the first thing is which is going to happen is that we're just going to take log of n factorial and try to extrapolate that sequence. So there's again a criterion. And since the set of trend series is also stable under exponentiation and logarithm, I can transform back again too. So basically, the general algorithm afterwards, what we do is just combine difference of these tactics and their inverses. We just try all of them, assuming that these criteria are met. And we try all those which successively meet the criteria. Usually there's just one criterion at most which is met. If by chance, sometimes there are two which are met, then we just try both of them. So we do all that. We try all these things, and at the end we do the inverse. If we found something, we do the inverse transformation. Of course, this is not going to work for things which oscillate. Trend series only model behavior which is very regular at infinity. Okay, but for things with just exponentials, logarithms, and sums, and things like that, that does the trick. So I thank you. I think, yeah, this is more or less.